The Shaq Show is a production of iHeartRadio. I doubt Sir Nick Faldo needs any introduction, but I will remind you that he won 41 times around the world, 6 major championships. 30 years ago, he won the Masters for the second straight year and the Open Championship at the Old Course. He's been with CBS since 2006 as their lead analyst. He had 19 top fives in major championships. He earned 25 Ryder Cup points. This is for the kids out there. Just reminding you that it was an incredible career. Sometimes, as somebody noted yesterday when I told them I was interviewing Sir Nick, that we maybe forget how good some of these analysts are. It's hard for them to discuss themselves without people getting upset with them. But so Nick never has a shortage of thoughts and eloquent, interesting ideas, and I wanted to cover a wide array of things with him. He has a new show coming out Monday. I'll have show notes on my website, jeffshackelford.com. It's a lifestyle travel show, which I oddly thought would be very uncomfortable to watch in these times, but it's kind of comforting, and it reminds you of some things. We get into that. He's an ambassador for Inspirato, so travel is always on his mind. And we went pretty deep with the golf swing, the transformation of a swing, and a lot of other fun topics. So here is my chat with Sir Nick Faldo. You're a person who likes to travel. You live out of a suitcase. How are you dealing with this time?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because, you know, since I've been on tour, and I went out on tour at 18, you know, this is the longest time I've ever spent in my house or a house in my whole life. And I think my record in one spot was 5 weeks. And I know that was 16 odd years ago when Emma was born. We went to Thailand and, you know, made camp for a winter, 5 weeks in a house and stayed in one spot. And so this is my world record now. So I think we're at week 6 here. You know, we have a place at Ponte Vedra Beach, so we came in for the Players, and we've sat tight. So we thought we might as well, you know, when you watch, and even this morning, you know, I said to Lindsay, we better just hunker down because this thing is still around. I don't think people taking it, you know, I don't think enough people are taking it really seriously, really disciplined about, you know, just staying in your own little world. Because, you know, if we keep spreading it, we won't be back watching golf. sports, you know, I think it's, I wanted to send a message to all those demonstrators and say, well, who are you going to complain to when there's no sport on this summer or fall? Yeah, then who are you going to scream at? Because, you know, it might be because of, we're not disciplined enough to really get a grip on this.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, we need to have more people know that football season's in jeopardy in our country, and that would probably
that might be it. Yeah, because everything sounds so far away, doesn't it? Because, you know, when we, you know, here we are when we were in early April, and then we got news that you know, we're going to try and go back to work in June, and you think, well, were we still in March then? I guess we were still in March when those decisions, when you think April, May, my goodness, that's a long time. It's a long time away. Anyway.
What are you missing most about the road?
I mean, I think because you suddenly, we're always in such a routine and you're always doing things. So that's really what's completely stopped. It's suddenly like you haven't got a routine each day. You know, you can get very lax. We've actually trying to make some rules that, you know, you've got to get up and jump around. If we skip doing my exercises in the morning, then the afternoon I get very, I'm not too sure I want to, you know, get a sweat up. So I like to get up and do things. And then, so even that, everything takes discipline, doesn't it? You got to, and I think, I mean, we're watching all these shows, and even meditation is a discipline to sit and relax. And we were talking about this last night, Lindsay and I, and said, "Can we got to do that?" So I wrote a big, memo, stuck it under the clock, and said, "Meditate." So we just did it this morning. So because it's so good for you, it repairs all sorts of stuff and reconnects you, and just switching off. It's actually forcing us to have a bit of quiet time, silence time to ourselves, which is probably a good thing. Recharge the batteries.
When I watched your new show that's debuting on Monday night, like a lot of shows, when you watch right now, you see things. Some things make you uncomfortable. Some things make you say, "Well, that's not going to ever happen again." Whatever it is, a bunch of people blowing out a birthday candle or something. But I was struck because I feared watching your show, which is a lifestyle travel show, I think, if I'm summing it up correctly. It actually made me think, this is going to make us watching this not uncomfortable, but you'll actually be more appreciative of things we've currently lost in the first world, the people who really are not suffering during this. Is that your sense of that? Did you worry now with this show debuting, when it's debuting in the middle of this, that there might be a misunderstanding or it's just poor timing, but it turns out it's kind of comforting and a nice reminder?
Yeah, well, we are going to clarify that. Yeah, this was all shot.
Yeah,
pre. Yes. I haven't been sneaking out and shooting stuff, and this was a combination of, I've been doing this for, when did we really start ramp this up? 6-8 months ago or more, we started dreaming up this idea, what we wanted, an opportunity to create something like this, because. This is my life now. The television and content is king, and we thought, well, why don't we start? It's even before that we started interviewing this early last year, I think. Yeah, I think we've probably been doing this for a full year at least, trying to, now we've got it, put it together, and now we're going to put 4 shows out while there's some golf going on, and then we'll have a little breather and get ready, hopefully, to put more out at the end of the season. And I quite enjoy it because it's good for me. I did, as we were saying, we did enjoy traveling, enjoy going to different places. And then it's, and I enjoy the entertainment of entertaining myself and and my fans. I mean, it's quite, and I thought, well, everybody's, it's, and there's not really a case of joining it. I think I just genuinely thought, well, why not show people what we get up to? Because a lot of people are generally interested, and they go, "Wow, this is what our life's like." It's either they're dreaming we're living in palaces, or and they're going to get a nasty shock, whatever the spectrum. And I thought, well, it's just good, simple entertainment. And I'm a huge believer in, looking after ourselves health wise, which means which is mind, doing different things. That's fitness for your body. That's obviously food, bit of fun with drink and what have you. In the last couple of years, I've been starting to meet some very different people, fascinating people in their fields. And we thought, well, hey, why not just show this? It's kind of like it is part of the trend, but who knows where it may go? I mean, I used to love watching some of our old shows back in the long time ago. We had a great chef called Keith Floyd, and he used to just go somewhere with his little cooking gas, and he'd be on a harbour and say, "Well, the squid's just come in fresh, and you need a bit of this." And his cameraman was John. So that's, and he said, "John, you do a close up while I have a slow." And he have a bottle of wine, and he'd drink a glass of wine, and then they said, "Right, let's carry on." So it was that style, and I think I want to bring a bit of humour to it. All those things, try to it's a bit of harmless entertainment, I hope.
It is, and it doesn't, you don't sit there and watch and have anything but a good feeling. You don't feel uncomfortable either about how life was before. It makes you, at least for me, kind of aspirational about when some form of normalcy returns, that we'll be a little more appreciative of maybe things that we had not been taking for granted.
Well, we really will. This really will, unfortunately, after 9/11 had changed, you know, the security world, and this will change our hygiene world, and obviously it will change the business world significantly. Hopefully it will change the hygiene world for the better, because, you know, we go through airports and they are filthy. I mean, they really are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, and you start, and if you now realize, right, we've got to, everything's got to be better, better quality of everything, and this sort of, so there's that side. You know, the business side, my goodness, look how it's changed. I've got obviously friends in a lot of businesses, and, you know, now the very simple thing that companies now realize that, well, so many people can work from home and they can still operate. So why have I got that $1 billion building in the middle of a city? I mean, it's going to be that, you know, the commercial real estate is going to be very interesting, that side of things. And then I was going to say, and then we then start into look at our own lives, go, which is, you know, what do I really need for my life? What's the really important things in my life? Well, you know, sure, all the fast cars are stuck in the blooming garage. They're not being driven. And, you know, it's great to have all your little luxuries. But when you really come down to what do you really need in a day to operate? And it's generally, you've got to just keep your mind active, doing some interesting things. I think that's important. Keep your body active. That's very important. And then obviously your relationship with your partners and friends is very important. I think the funniest thing is how we all send these crazy videos. We never did that before, did you? You got one a month, did you? I get six a day of these, some of these, anything silly, funny, you know, from cats, people doing voiceovers for cats and dogs. And have you seen the one where the lady's rock climbing and the leg falls off?
No.
Oh, you've got to see that one.
Okay, I'll look for
it. You've got to pull that one up. And it's good old British comedy. Well, it's just a fantastic line. And it's
and I'm sure you've seen Andrew Cotter's.
Yeah, Andrew, that was brilliant. That was very clever. You know, he did that. And so, you know, yeah, to do a commentary of a dog and a bike. It's actually probably very good for us. We're going to get more creative, and you know, who knows what we will dream up and say, hey, I'm actually really good at doing that. And, you know, that will inspire us to do things from home as well. I mean, I've still been voicing my show, and I did one in my back garden the other day, voiced while they're building the golf course across the road.
Right.
They've got the truck going beep, beep, and I got to go in between the beep, beep and the dumper truck. And it would have been so easy. I could have done it in, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. And we sat there for freaking 2 hours to get some space time. So it was getting really, then I was trying to do a swings thing, and he's going beep, and I lost the head. I'm effing and blind. I'm screaming at this fucking truck across the way. And I thought, well, this is really good. I'm trying to create. So I've even got my own. I've got my own kit to do some recording. I've actually got to do a bit more recording sooner than we've done this. They want a couple more lines, so I got my own little world where I sit. It's so funny. I'm in the bedroom originally with all the pillows because it sounded good. I sit in the master. Yep. Because when I get on the bed, the dogs come and sit on the bed as well. So I'm now like, okay, I'm trying to record with these with these 370-pound puppies. You can't push them out of the way. So, oh, guys, I've got to get them out of the room. Or do I risk them? They all look at me and just go silent. So I thought, okay, do I risk doing this while they're in here? So that's life. Life at the Faldos.
Yeah, your Weimaraners, you posted a video of the, was it a Medterra? Do they make a dog food? Is that right?
We did it was for a lark because, you know, Saxon's great. They're great characters, but he pops up, you know, very naughty. We let him, he puts his feet up on the counter and we chat to him because he's lovely. He comes for his morning chat sort of thing and you just chat away and he's looking what you've got and he's either pretending he's not looking or he is looking. So I then, you know, I do it for, we always give them little snacks. We're really, very naughty. So then we did it for a laugh first time. I said, hey, this is morning snacks with me and Saxon. So we did whatever, and then we're dreaming up all sorts of things. And then we got a call from my friends at Medterra. Well, we got these doggy treats. Would you do that for a laugh for us? I said, sure, we'll do it for a laugh. So, you know, hey, I'm just doing it for our entertainment. And
people,
and it's the hilarious bit. He gets more hits than me. he gets more likes than I do. You know, Lindsay said, oh, 50,000 people have just looked at that blooming video. They and then, oh, I've done, and every interview. So, hey, that's a good point. So I've now done, I think I've done four interviews now, and everybody's talked about Saxon.
Yeah. Well, he's lady, a looker.
He's great. And the lady opened with it. She calls, she goes, hi. Oh, by the way, I love Saxon. So I did the interview, started with Saxon and finished with Saxon. That was for sports. That was Blooming Talk Sport in Blooming England or whatever. It's Five Live. They start with Saxon. You've got to start with, we love your dog. And then we go, and then we end with, I thought, hey, this is ridiculous. He's going to be, hopefully he is more famous than me.
Good. Yeah. It's very weird right now with the dogs. When, at least here in LA, when you go out for a walk and you wear a mask, you realize how much they feed off of humans smiling at them. So when you look at them with a mask, they think you're, they give you this horrible look, and you realize, oh, it's the, I look like I'm going to hurt them. It's bizarre. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to take a quick break here on the Shaq Show, and then we're going to talk a couple little golf topics. So, did you watch any of the? I know you're not a huge watcher of old year old golf tournaments, even, right? It's kind of awkward, like a writer reading their writing or a musician listening to their work. Did you watch much of the recent Masters replays?
It's funny, I did. It's because obviously we were talking all about 30 years ago, defending, and obviously one. The Masters and the Open in 30 years ago. So we wanted to celebrate that somehow this year. And so, I was doing an interview and because they're saying, well, you hit that two iron into the 15th on Sunday. And I said, I don't remember that. I honestly don't remember we do have another idea where we wanted to put through Zoom or some way, we might put the 90s Masters up and then have Fanny Sunes and my caddy in Sweden on Zoom and then me and then watch the rerun.
Yes.
And then so we can react to. So I did say, let's not watch it because it would be more fun to get a very first reaction like, I don't remember that.
Right.
Or so I'm sure I can forget it very quickly in 2 weeks. And so when we do it again. But I did watch some bits. And, the highlights of, especially the playoffs, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was really interesting hearing Tiger. It took him a while, as he warmed up watching his last from last year.
Yeah.
Some of the things that started coming out because it's just a different medium. So nobody's really used to it. And early on, Jim was asking him the right questions. But then as the back nine comes, things get more interesting than more, but it was really fascinating. So I wish you watch that and then you think of your wins and absolutely. Yeah. And I got to watch with you and it's never aired. Hopefully someday Golf Channel will put it on, but you watching you just watch your sequence in 96 on 13 with talking to Ken Venturi. That was so much. That was so fun to listen to because of rights reasons. We couldn't include it in the piece, but it's, I think people, golf more than any sport on the replays, getting to hear your thinking or what was going through your mind or your reactions is really interesting. So,
we're definitely going to do that. We are planning. We were even thinking of Fanny, Fanny Sinison and I going to St Andrews and reliving some of, because we've got we've got some very cool technology we're working on as well.
Oh yeah.
So that, we can actually see, we can take you to, Fanny's got a yardage book, which is great. And then we can obviously go to the exact spot where we hit some great shots. And we can see it again from that level. And obviously we've got drones now, so we can see it from another angle and all this sort of thing. So, that's all part of the show ideas that, that would be a really great content to go and do that. Talk through Augusta and then maybe go and play some holes at St Andrews would be very cool. That would be, I thought that would be a couple of good shows there.
Thinking about there have been a couple of podcasts lately that are really fun listening to people, a younger group, admiring your career and especially a 10-year run you had in the majors after you had reshaped your game. and it's one, it's quickly, how quickly people forget, you realize that, but also, I don't know how much people realize the risk you took in reshaping your game. Do you look at that now and then look at the way the game is played today and ever wonder what you would do now with your game? Would you be all about power instead of that precision player you became from being somebody who hit it pretty long, but then you went about it to be more accurate?
Yeah, I wanted the ball flight and the consistency, and then you end up with a real control. I mean, to be able to hit a fades and draws just down to a couple of yards. Well, sometimes it's really good. It might be a yard. I called it the 1 yard fade at times. You know, I could probably not with every club, but certainly with the short end, that's what you felt like you were able to do. And if you were doing a rebuild now. It's completely different game, of course. It really is. We were, it was all about tempo, isn't it? Tempo, obviously ball strike and flight, all those sort of things, but it was all these just simple that. You look at the tempo, they put up the tempo at Bryson the other day from about 2 years ago at Kapalua. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then you've got him now just hurtling, trying to get 205 miles an hour.
With a baby bump. Oh, sorry.
Was that?
With a baby bump. he's large. He's gotten big. Well,
I said that jokingly. God, after 3 months, how big is Bryson going to be when he comes? That means he's in the gym. He's going to be a monster. I'm hoping to do a show with him because, boy, he's an interesting character, isn't he?
He really is.
So same thing. He's completely bucked the trend of going from mega length. The interesting thing is though, he hasn't won since he he was the hottest golfer on the planet. He won five times in 13. Yeah, but that's now the end of, so the last one was beginning of 19 or 18. I can't even remember.
Beginning of 19, I believe.
Okay, got one in beginning of 19. So then I saw him at Augusta, and now he's completely changed his clubs. So he'd gone from a 120 gram grip down to a 60 gram grip. So that's huge, the weight balance. And that means he's got to reconfigure, test all the shafts, come up with different shafts. So he's constantly tested. So that, I believe, did mess him up for a little while. He put in an awful lot of work. I mean, 14 hour days are just normal. They can't get him up off the bloody range, So. Yeah.
But you never changed your body that radically,
no,
right?
No, we didn't. No. No, hey, so if you're going back to me, the knowledge we had was minuscule to what we have now. So, mine was the old-fashioned way you Hogan, the answer was in the dirt. So it was, we just went off and hit golf balls. And doing it mid-season, when you look back in hindsight, it all started in May of 85. I was at Muirfield Village and I just missed the cut. And I think I double bogeyed the 12th hole twice. Couldn't hit the bloody green. And David was there. I said, okay, I'm ready to get started. So, in hindsight, that was stupid because we were now learning a new backswing with an old follow through. So, of course, my game just went off into the dumps. And this is 85, 83, I was European number one. So I then get hammered by the media. And everybody in my contract, my contracts all disappeared apart from good old Pringle. Pringle stuck with me. it was crazy. So all I was doing is trying to go and play. So I'd go and practice all day when I was at home. And I remember I'd think of something and go down to the range. I used to go down like 5 or 6 times, go down to the range, tip the balls out, hit them. Come back, think about it, all that sort of thing. This went on and on and on. Then you go off to a tournament and you're 4 over after 9, great. And blah, blah, missed it. And then you come back and I would do it again and again and again and again. And we didn't have any of this knowledge. And then in the winter, that was through the summer, through the sea. And then in the winter, I remember, I'd fly to Florida and go down to David, who was down at Greenleaf, in September, stinky hot weather and beat balls all day. until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My hands wouldn't close, you know, literally I couldn't close my hands. And then I go off and have a swim. And because like an idiot, I'm back out at 6 o'clock trying to hit a few more. So, you know, I did that for, hey, how can you do that for 2 years? I mean, that's what's ridiculous. And then the spring of 87, again, I'd gone through, at the end of 86, I had to finish second at Disney to keep my card. Mm. And guess where I finished? I finished second and to keep my card. And, you know, in 87, I wasn't in the Masters. I then came over and practiced. And I can remember going through Atlanta Airport to pick up my wife, Jill, then. And the golfers and the press were turning left and taking the flight to Augusta. And I was turning right and going to Hattiesburg. And so that was a real, that was a gut check, whatever they call it, you know.
Yeah.
Or knife. So I went off to Hattiesburg and I shot 467s and finished second. And that was when it clicked. And then I came. Mm. So, but that's 2 years. You couldn't do that now. So bottom line, that was idiotic. So now if somebody said, I got to change my game mid-season, I would say, well, disappear. If you're exempt, if you really got to do it now, just disappear. Go off somewhere for 2 months and take your sports psychologist to clear your brain out. You need your physical guy to train you. You need a physiotherapist to work, keep your muscles in good check. You could, if you're going to do it, what about taking a chef for your diet and everything? And then I think you could do some, and of course you've got all these fancy ball monitors, launch monitors now, so you get instant feedback, which we didn't have. Mine was word. You know, I've hit 1,000 balls with David going, yeah, that's good. That's coming. And you're like, well, now, as you know, with a launch monitor, they're fantastic. You hit one ball, you've got instant feedback. So you can translate a thought and a feeling to factual information. So I would, to do it now, it's all about timing. If you had to do it, disappear, or can you hang on and wait to the end of the season and then again disappear, go somewhere nice, either go Hawaii or Thailand or whatever, make camp and get on with it. But to do it while playing tournament golf was really, really dangerous. I mean, I'm amazed that, you know, I kept my determination through all of that. Mm. Because even family was saying, you know, do you think you should consider, especially my father-in-law actually said, do you think you should consider getting a club professional's job? So that was big help. That was, that was negativity personified. So I was like, well, no, I could see the light. Even that line wasn't even right to say seeing the light of the tunnel. You believed that what you were doing and doing and doing, and then finally it clicked. But again, it could have, even what I know about the golf swing now and, you know, even ball flight laws and what have you, what we could have changed, even learning that way as well. We were learning positions where, you know, I teach myself on ball flight, good old boy. I make the golf ball do something. So what have I physically and technically got to do to make that golf ball do what I want it to do? And that's how I learn now.
You never move the ball a lot one way or another, right? Your rebuild was more about hitting it straighter.
No. I made the ball, you just call it tipping rather than curving. You know, I had my shots that had a little bit of a fade and a little bit of a draw. And then I had a bigger fade, which is the way I call it now is teach yourself, you know, where to hit the ball rather than where you don't want the ball to go. So people say, you know, I don't want it to go left. Okay, so what do you see when you say I don't want it to go left? I'm looking out the window. My eyes go to the left hand side of the window. But if you say but the pond's on the left because you're saying I don't want it to go left. So I would now say make the ball go to the right, and my eyes automatically go to the right hand side of the window here. So I would have taught, I teach myself that way now, and I try to teach my kids and my founders to say, make the ball go where you want it to go, rather than saying, I don't want to slice it and I don't want to hook it, which means the opposite. I want it to go down the right side of the fairway. So how do you make this ball fly down the right-hand side of the fairway, high or low? And that's what I got really good at. I had, as you probably heard me describe, I had one backswing, really, and four different follow-throughs. And I had a high fade and a low fade and a high draw and a low draw. And, yeah, when I got really good, if I'm moving it against the wind, which is what you really were doing, it looked like I was hitting the golf ball straight. But I was always working, you know, it's slightly fading and slightly drawing. And I really believed in that. Make the ball move. I don't believe in a straight shot. That's, I mean, what is straight? I'll give you straight is 1 yard left or right. And that's pretty darn difficult to guarantee. But if you said to me, fade it, you know, I can fade it. And if I get really good, my fade got down to 1 and 2 yards, you know. So
would you like to see the modern ball move a little bit more? Not as the players move it, but because of aerodynamics, that it maybe be more shapeable or move more on a miss?
Well, Bubba will argue that.
He's one.
Yeah, it is shapeable, but we've worked so hard on trying to find this. If you do some serious, Bubba's quite unique. He can do some really exaggerated things, which is pretty rare.
It's amazing to watch in person. It's amazing.
Not many guys can hit a driver, you know, 5 degrees on the descent and then five. He can do 5 degrees on the up. That is pretty amazing. That really is amazing. No, I was tweeting the other day. The ball market is huge. I mean, that's serious money. We've been watching golfers get longer and longer, and that's television. You know, guys stand up, Rory hits it 350 down a hole. We're kind of into that, you know. There's always going to be a long, even if you throttled them back to 300, sure, then you've also throttled back the guys who can only hit it 280 down to 250, you know. So there's that side to it. I would like it to be more difficult, i.e. the quality of the strike. You know, I tweeted the other day about, you know, back in persimmon days and Bellata ball, there was only a handful of really great drivers. You know, obviously Greg was great and Jack, and obviously Trevino was great for his way, and Watson, and even Seve was a great driver. I know it went sideways at times, but when he hit it, you know, it was. But you can name them. It was only a dozen max.
Right.
And then now, best example I can give, there's only a dozen poor drivers now. Yeah, there's only a few that everybody else can get it. I hate to think of the percentage you can get it 300 through the air. And then there's obviously there's the 320 club, there's the 300 club. And then average, everybody says, yeah, I'm about 290, 295. Yep. Kind of my. So that is what, that is thanks to the brilliant technology of a driver face, marrying it with the perfect shaft, and obviously optimizing your spin and launch, obviously through your golf ball. So if we brought the size of the face down, so it was seriously, you know, there were some serious mishits.
Yeah,
yeah, we brought back the mishit for the sweet spot for the pro is a real sweet spot, not the sweet face. That's what it is now. It's a whole blooming thing. So I thought that would be great to bring back the, and it's a little bit like a three wood, and or the other simplest way, saying in jest at times. Well, if we banned tee pegs, if they went and played a tournament with, we had no tee pegs, right? Well, the guys would have to alter their driver. They'd say, all right, and you actually were just allowed to place it on the tee, on the grass. Now they wouldn't be using 6 degrees. They'd say, okay, no. I need nine and I need 10 and I need one that's going to at least get it airborne a bit. And I got to have a bit of give in the face. And, you know, that would seriously change it. Sure, they can hit a three wood because it's designed, but that might be your optimum. That actually would be your optimum. Your three wood off the ground, I was just seeing Rory's numbers, you know, still a 285 through the air, but They wouldn't. It would be a real tough hit to get a driver off the deck.
Yes.
You know, so that's what I think we've got to get back to, is that it's a real quality of strike. And that would bring in, you know, there'd be a little bit more inconsistency that, and, you know, and I love the way they set up Royal Melbourne, you know, last year. The guys really got a, somewhere it was a real jolt. It's quite fantastic. If you hit a 2-iron off the tee and it's in the wrong position, that you can't get your wedge to stop on the green.
Right.
So, you know, that I think is fantastic. We can, and the guys loved it, and the better players actually loved it. Look how Tiger absolutely loved that, because it's like, okay, it's not just smash it down there and go and find it and then work it out. It was like, hey, there really is importance of being left or right of center, because I just cannot get to this flag. That's the beauty and the brilliance of Royal courses like that, Royal, and obviously when they're rock hard.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. And it's so I'd love that back. I mean, I don't mind them hitting it miles down there, but it's amazing how they can hit it in the right rough and the flag's on the right and they still hit the and it's just not punished enough.
No.
You know, that's the thing. And the bottom line is, if the green was a little firmer, you know, if the greens had a bit more bounce in them, then you would be absolutely screwed if you're in the right rough to a right pin, even with no bunker in the way or anything in the way. You would not be able to, it'd be a seriously great shot to get it inside 15 feet. So little things like that, we can, if we want it, you know, some places, some tournaments, obviously, We can't make it too difficult. We don't want it to be level par.
No.
You know, because everybody gets bored, call that boring golf, even though it can be fascinating to us. And we don't want 24 under every week.
No.
Or was it just a putting contest? So we got to find the right balance. But I would have thought if you got control of the weather, you could get pretty close to that.
And having pure sand would be great, which reminds me of something else I wanted to ask you about. I'm going to take another quick break here on the Shaq Show, and then I'm going to ask you about Bartra. I believe I pronounced it correctly. All right, so I watched the Scratch video.
Yeah.
Of you. It was the first time you'd been on this site. It's off the coast of the west coast of Ireland. In 7 years, I think it said. What? Tell us about this incredible looking property. Does it have the sand to create the firm and fast golf that we want?
Oh well, it's a nightmare project to me, to be honest. It's
well, the great ones always are.
Yeah. So we were given photographs of that. Hang on, let's get this right. My son was 8. He's 31 now. You do the maths.
Wow.
We went on the island when Matthew was 8. Somebody sent us some photographs, and and when you went and looked at this, it's the most amazing piece of land, because basically it's a strip of land starting wide at the east end, and about 500 yards wide, and then it literally goes to a point, like a long skinny triangle goes to literally a point of like 30 yards wide, slowly getting more and more narrow. And it's got dune and all sorts of different mixture of dunes. Even the low ones you think look lower look nothing. When you get down there, there's still, you know, 6, 10, 15 foot high. And then we got the other end when we go crazy up to 80 foot high dunes. And then the bottom end is kind of unusable because it's just really just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Too severe, you mean?
Too severe. So, you know, this would be a 2-hour show if I told you. So the bottom line, it took 12 years before we could purchase it because people fighting over who owned it. Mm. There was a dispute who owned it.
Wow.
Then we got on board with my friend, a very good friend who's in the property business. But we thought it would be smart to help him to have two Irish partners. And that went wrong from day one. so So that didn't, so nothing worked at all. So it's kind of just sat there. It's the simplest way of saying it's just sat there. And then, so we went, I've been telling friends about this, and then they said, well, let's go and see it. And so we're going to give it one more go to try, you know, and have a meeting, because, you know, some people say it's, you know, protected and what have you. And then some parts of it are, you know, we've come to the conclusion now that we're, if there is, the East End is on rock. So we are, and it used to be a monk's monastery there.
Oh, wow.
And so there's the walled gardens and all sorts of things. And then there was an 18th century house, manor house. So in some way, we've been given some kind of permissions on what we can guide, and with guidance rather than permissions, guidance on what we could do at that end of the island. So we're going to really go back and have, you know, sometime in the summer, have a really good meeting and try and pursue, you know, what is possible. If they say, yes, this is possible, great. If they say no, we're going to just forget it. And so, because, you know, if I dream up, it could have been the ultimate 18-hole golf links course, because it's 9 out and 9 back, absolutely genuine. You go out to the west, you've got the sun behind you when you start in the morning, and then you've got the sun behind you when you come back on the back nine. So how unbelievably perfect is that?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, why don't we build this thing by hand? Let's really build this by hand. And I said, well, wouldn't it be great if we could put a couple of mobile homes on there? And we invite mates to say, hey, come for however long you want. And here's the deal. We've got it. We've got the phones stay at the door. You check in, you know, check in with the world maybe, but you leave your phones at the door and you put your jeans on. And we go out there and we give you all a rake and everything. We say, right, here's the first tee. Flatten it.
Yeah.
And we walk. And we say, well, this is going to be the fairway. And we, or whatever, we push some kind of gang mowers down there sort of thing. And say, well, that looks great for a bunker. Well, here's the green. Right, clean it up. And I thought that would be quite a project. It would be perfect now, because everybody would have got time. We could have said, yeah, I've got a month to do nothing. I'll go and build a golf course. So, so that's I've got all sorts of different visions, but it's quite amazing. And, of course, the light. And there's 3,000 yards of beach there.
Wow.
This beautiful golden sand and all sorts of ideas. But gosh, who knows if it will ever come off, you know?
And now with what has happened in the world, and this is not just related to this project, but anything in golf, have you thought a little bit about what will change or what should change coming out of this, I've said it many times on a few different shows. It's an opportunity, and I hate the word, but the reality is this is a chance to reset some things, because I feel like some things that were happening before this, trends will now be expedited. Have you given any thought to the game at large about what will happen?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the world really will have this is significant enough. The whole planet is going to have to react to this. So for us golfers, you know, if we, you know, we fought for a while, because we do have an opportunity to continue playing our game. You know, we're finally getting golf courses reopened. And I personally thought it was ridiculous to shut a golf course if you wanted to go and play as a one ball. If they want to be really strict, you don't have to change your shoes anymore. You bowl up, take your clubs out of your car, you go to the first tee, and you go and play. And we could easily have done that. We didn't have to go into lockdown on a golf course, I personally think. Now we're coming back. We can demonstrate that our game is really good for us to get back out there and play. And and who knows what clubs might do to entice people, because people might say, hey, I want to give this golf a go, and I don't know anything about it. And it's a great outdoor sport. And so I think clubs, you know, I've been suggesting to clubs, you know, I love par threes, you know, par three courses. And that, because as you know, we can either make 9 holes ridiculously easy, or you could play 9 hole par three course where you would not break par, you know.
Yeah.
It could be that you take the hardest, you take the 9 hardest par threes across the world, you know, your fourth at Riviera, and you copy a few of those, or you do your own interpretation of a few great par threes. I promise you, it would be a lifetime achievement to shoot one under.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we know that. We know the difference. So we can make it super enjoyable, super fun, and we can make it super challenging just because by saying, oh, 9-hole par three, because people go, oh, that doesn't mean anything. Well, we know as golfers, it could be a fantastic experience. So I'm inviting golf clubs to look at their layouts and say, well, why don't we have a little short course? What happens if we put a tee halfway down the first, we wander down, we start from there, and instead of going to the second, oh, there, we just build a tee here and go to the, oh, that's the sixth green over there. That's a lovely little shot over the woods, you know, something different across a corner of a pond, going the other way. Well, that works. That's only 120 yards. Oh, and where are we now? We're now on the side of the sixth. Let's have a look. Oh, actually, we can actually go back to the fourth green now. We could go across. Get me? So people could, they could look just with a little bit of work. And to be honest, you don't even have to build tees. Get some, get 9 mats. Go and get 9 good quality mats.
Yeah.
And just plonk them down there and just do it for fun and go and see what fun you create.
Yeah.
You know, I gave my guys brief long time ago to build par three courses that are reversible, things like that. So you can, and that becomes a real different challenge as well.
Was there a par three course in your life at some point that because I'm passionate about par threes too, and I'm going to do a podcast. Yeah. I've been asking everybody, was there one in particular?
No, I've never played a, here we are. I'm talking all about this, and I've never gone to a true par, or have I?
Did you play at Turnberry? Did you ever play that one below the hotel?
Well, we play that little one. Okay. So yeah, and there's par threes at Glen Eagles.
You have played
the
one at Augusta, I believe, too.
Oh, of course. Excuse me. Yeah. That's the main. Yeah, you're right.
That counts.
That's the main one. You're stealing me. How can you boom in?
Yeah. But no, so I know what you mean. You haven't just stopped one day driving and said, "Hey, let's go play the par three course in the neighborhood." No.
Yeah.
But I understand. Yeah.
So yeah, those ones are right under our nose. Yeah, aren't they? Because we're there. But I agree. We've got to keep. Hopefully, we can campaign this more because you know, we get projects at resorts, hotels, and say we'd like golf, and they say, well, we want, and they get stuck, and we want 72 holes championship course, and you're like, and we, you know, it's, and we scream and say, look, we could actually build you some really fun things that would be, and I think people might start thinking that, you know, because we really want family entertainment, the time factor, it, you know, the money, the everything, upkeep.
Yeah. It's been happening already. Bandon Dunes, Pinehurst, all these places, clubs are now rethinking.
Yeah,
them.
Absolutely. Well, what I was saying, a golf club may have a most wonderful little, doesn't have to be, it could be 6, 9, 12 holes, par threes, where you go and play the course and you hop around holes. And I would have thought if they sat and looked at their maps and said, well, we could go there, and go, well, how about that for a loop? We do that every Sunday for a laugh for a couple of hours. We open it up one morning a week and try it and see what people think.
Yeah.
I can't see any harm in that to introduce new people to the game and B, hey, it might be nice for the members to do something different.
Yep.
And you never know what you might create. I think of course we played the one at, that's the only one that's really purpose. Well, apart from Augusta, the one in, Bass Pro Shop tournament.
Right.
That one up in Ozark.
No, I think to your point, though, it's one of those things. Courses, you know, everybody's so caught up in 18 holes and more they need to set up. You know, George Thomas routed his courses to have loops of holes.
Yeah.
More public courses, more courses need to say, hey, today we're just playing 6 holes after 2 o'clock and it's $20 and be more flexible because the 18 hole thing is just, I mean, if you started the game from scratch, it'd be Prestwick. It'd be 12 holes, I think.
Well,
today.
I agree. Yeah, look at that. Look at that. The Opens were 12 holes. I mean, so it's, you know, I know the RNA would back it because they will come up with, you know, play 9 initiatives. And I love it as you get older. You know, we go down and I love to hit balls, warm up properly, and we're saying we go and play 9 because the time factor, cause especially if you've got three dogs waiting for you at home.
Yeah,
now.
It's like, Saxon.
Exactly.
Ready. The dogs can't go with you when you play golf there?
We've never tried. We took them when we go to Montana, when we go up to the Wilderness Club, because obviously I'm way more involved with the club. So we let the dogs come out. They didn't actually come. I don't think they came on the course where we played. They were probably too young.
Take them to Sunningdale.
Well, it's a bit of a.
They love their dogs.
Yeah, exactly. They're disciplined now. They come back. They're.
Oh, you're more worried about that. I'm speaking more of the culture of which places allow dogs and which don't. In the UK, they get that right. We don't here. We act like they're going to go and rip up all the greens, which they're not.
Yeah, and I think dogs are smart enough to be disciplined, they love it. I mean, I remember the great stories about James Hunt, the racing driver who used to play, and he had a dog. And the dog was smart because he'd go to the tee. No, yes, he'd run down 50 yards down the fairway, and he knew, and he'd actually watch the ball flight go. When they hit, he'd watch the ball fly, and he knew where the three balls had gone. And he'd go off and find the balls and sit by James's ball. And he'd play the golf like that. And he knew he was disciplined. And I thought, wow, I would love to have a dog like that. Our three are too loopy, they're crazy. So, but yeah, it could be disciplined. They could be disciplined. I think they probably quite enjoy that. So,
So we ended the show talking about Saxon. So I've done it again.
There
like
you go.
The other one.
Yeah, he Saxon rules right now. He's, we need the Saxon show. We're going to do one with cheeses next. We thought we could get some international cheeses and do a cheese taste test next one. That's next on the menu for morning snacks with me and Saxon.
Thank you, Nick, so much.
Sure.
Hope you enjoyed that discussion with Sir Nick. He is always interesting, and I'm glad to hear he's constantly thinking about different things as we try to get through this bizarre time. Again, his show is Days and Nights. It premieres Monday, April 26th. On the CBS Sports Network, and I will link all sorts of good stuff in the show, including that fun video with Saxon, his dog, and I'll see what else I can dig up on Sir Nick. There's some really interesting links that might give you a little fun distraction content. I hope you enjoyed that discussion, though. He also gave me some wonderful stuff after the show about getting started in the game, which we're getting close now. Every guest I've asked about how they got started, and I've asked about par three courses. Well, you already heard the par three course, but we'll probably put it in that show again, too. But I love hearing these different ways people got started, and Nick really went deep on that. It was very fascinating because he's a late starter, and it'll be comforting to those parents out there who think you must start the game by the age of 10 or else you have no chance in life. As always, I'd like to thank the show's producer, Tim Porochka, for piecing together these recordings that I do. And just a reminder that The Shack Show is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'll be back soon. Thank you so much for listening to The Shack Show.